As we approach Giving Tuesday on December 3rd, we want to take a moment to reflect on how grateful we are for our incredible donors. Their generosity helps Berkeley students like us access scholarships, innovative programs, and life-changing opportunities. Because of their support, we're able to pursue our dreams. This Giving Tuesday, you can join our community of supporters and make a difference in the lives of Berkeley students. Every gift, no matter the size, has an impact. So, as we count our blessings this season, consider giving back to the place that has given so much to us. Visit berkeley.edu/giving-tuesday and be part of a tradition of generosity and gratitude.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Berkeley Alumni's Pass the Mic, where we pass the mic to you. I'm Jaquel Illy.
I am Patrick Farma.
Okay. Woo, that was a really good intro. Finally, you know, I didn't have no bad reaction to that one.
You laughed at me. That was pretty bad reaction.
It wasn't bad, though. I was just looking like, okay, is there more? But no, I love the energy, boss. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. We are like really in the midst of like a bunch of podcasty stuff. So
yes,
we're busy like, bees.
This is our job for real. Like I love it. I love it here. And today we are in a new location. Where are we?
We are at the PRX Podcast Garage in Boston, and we're not sure if we're in Alston or Brighton. And I don't think anybody knows because it's always called Alston Brighton.
What about this place? Like, why are we even here?
Well, PRX is like a big leader in podcasts and has a bunch of different stories and in different series that come out of here. And I think that we've reached the echelon of being able to record at PRX.
Absolutely.
Even if it's just for a couple hours today. It's really exciting. It's down the street from GBH where we might be cooking up something over there as well.
Stay tuned.
But we're starting to get the hang of this podcast thing. So we're making some moves.
We are. Thank you guys for staying on the journey with us as we continue to figure it out to give you the best content ever. All right. So we want to change the tone and we have an important announcement. What is it, boss?
That's putting a lot of pressure on me. So I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it. We had an election. And this isn't the place where we're going to go into a deep dive on that. But there was an election. Holidays are coming up. It's that time of year in Boston where the sun sets at 2:30 in the afternoon. There's a lot of things going on where it might not be easy for people on a day-to-day.
Right.
So we looked at what we have at Berkeley, and we said, what do we have in the Berkeley tool belt that we can pull out of to help the listeners manage their mindset and all that stuff? And we thought we would reach out to music therapy.
Yes, we reached out to Joy Allen, who is the chair of music therapy and directs the Music and Health Institute at Berkeley. And she was able to bless us with 5 tips that we can use in our everyday life when our spirits and emotions are just not there.
One of the cool things about music therapy is that while it sounds like playing music just to make you happy, there's a lot of science that goes into it. And Joy will give you some science stuff too.
So first I would say is if you're listening, just to take a moment to take a deep breath and exhale. And then if you can, just take a moment to put your hand over your heart and feel your heartbeat and the rhythm. And it's that rhythm that really has the remarkable ability to calm our nervous system. So that heart rate, along with what we call neurotransmitters in our brain, influence our moods, our emotions, our ability to cope with different stressors. So how exactly can we do that and use it to our advantage? One of the things that we talk about with stress is cortisol levels. So it's that hormone associated with stress, but it can also be used to calm the nervous system, particularly during stressful activities. So we want to regulate our cortisol levels and we want to release feel-good chemicals. And music releases dopamine, which is associated with reward and motivation. And it also activates our brain pleasure centers, things that create feelings of relaxation and happiness, including stimulating our memories, but also within all of that, that connection back to the heart rate, the blood pressure, and breathing.
So Jaquel, I just wanted to stop here because I got to the PRX Podcast Garage early today. And I was listening to this in the car. I put my hand over my heart and I took a deep breath. And immediately I felt my body just like say like, okay, you're in a different place right now. Oof. It worked.
That's deep.
Yeah, right?
I'm saying.
So now we're going to go into tip number one. And I'm going to tell you right now, I will not do this tip.
No, see? No. You have to.
Nope. Thanks, Joy. Thank you for your four tips with music. Here's tip one.
Take a 5-minute dance break. Believe it or not, if you're a Grey's Anatomy fan, Meredith and the dance breaks make a big difference. So take five minutes, put on your favorite song, and dance away. Don't worry about what you look like. Don't worry if someone's watching. If you're not comfortable with dancing, stretching is just as good. Taking 5 minutes to help move your body is going to release not only those feel-good chemicals, but it's going to help you get that physical release that you need.
What is up with you and dancing? Like, I feel like this is an ongoing theme since I've met you for the past 3 years, and I'm just not understanding.
I think what had happened was that I think I was 8 years old and I was dancing and someone either acknowledged that I was dancing or said something about my dancing as an 8-year old boy. And I decided from that moment I would never dance again.
Oh my gosh. See, that's unfortunate. We cannot let other people keep you back from being great, boss. Like, forget that. You are a grown man. You can dance. And you have a little daughter who wants to dance with you.
I'll do the box step, but that's it.
Well, Joy did mention that you can also stretch. So that's another alternative if you're ever feeling down. So
yes. And now that I've reached this point in my life, I need to stretch a lot.
Stretch. Yes. That is super important.
But you know what? I was wondering, what happens if you need focus?
If it's focus that you're struggling with, believe it or not, we know from the research that listening to video game scores can make a big difference in helping you focus. Believe it or not, putting on some great game scores can make a difference in helping you focus and get through the day.
Just a shout out to Zach Lucia, our coworker who scores video games. Whenever I think about video game scoring, I think of Zach. And Zach can also kind of set the table for like a nice, peaceful place where you can focus. So
yeah. So you're going to start playing your video game music in the background if you ever need to focus.
Right. Nice. And if you ever hear video game music in the background, I am listening to it.
Okay.
Tip number three. Sometimes we need some positive affirmations or feel some good self-esteem. This is where theme songs can come into a big play. Pick a song that channels how you want to feel or what you want to be, whether that's, you know, I Will Survive, any type of theme song that says, this is something that helps motivate me. This is something that brings back positive memories. This is something that really helps me channel that feeling and those emotions that I want.
What is your anthem, Jaquel?
I don't have a particular anthem, but I love listening to gospel music. I feel like that type of genre of music just relaxes me, calms me down, and makes me feel like way better afterwards. How about you?
So every Friday, I have a hangout with my film school buddies on Google. Usually to kick that off, I will play a Huey Lewis in the News song. Sometimes it's Happy to Be Stuck With You, but lately I've been playing If This Is It. And there's something about it that just brings me joy. And really? That's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Tip number four, use music for relaxation. Sometimes within that relaxation, it can be sounds or aspects of silence. Just being able to go to a space for 5 minutes, whether it's a small closet, a corner somewhere in your office or in your home, and just put on music that you can breathe in those sounds to allow you just to take 5 minutes and breathe. And if listening to music to help with relaxation does not help, believe it or not, singing can help you relax, because what do you need to do in order to sing? Breathe. So breathing is so important to regulating that heart rate and respiratory rate. And if breathing in the music doesn't help, definitely singing will.
I can think of no better quiet place to sit and listen to music than the PRX Podcast Garage in Alston, Brighton.
Nice. What about singing? You do sing. You used
I
to
do.
Sing.
I do. I haven't done it as much lately just because I've been doing other creative ventures, but I do want to get back to it. But singing through my 20s was probably one of the ways that I stayed sane and was able to be somewhat sane in my 40s. That's so, deep. No, it's really important.
Also, when she's talking about listening to music, I like to listen to like those lo-fi beats on YouTube.
Yeah,
those are very calming. Mm-hmm. I like those as well. Those like just background noise.
Yeah, my daughter listens to that when she goes to sleep.
Really? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay, Sophia.
And last tip is sometimes we need music to feel connected to ourselves and others. So in any of these things that you are doing, invite someone to join you. Take that 5 minutes to connect, or take it 5 minutes to say, hey, here's a song that I've been listening to. I'm gifting it to you today. Or have someone gift a song to you and take that 5 minutes to feel connected with someone else in a positive way. So 5 tips on incorporating music into your wellness routine. Ask yourself what it is that you need from the music. Do you need that physical release? Do you need to focus? Do you need to use it for self-esteem and affirmation? Do you need to use it for relaxation? Do you need to use it for connection? And then go after and find that to influence your heart rate, your blood pressure, your breathing, and to activate those pleasure centers that release dopamine while moderating your cortisol stress levels. Cheers.
So that was Joy's 5 tips. We can't thank Joy enough. We asked Joy last week when we came up with this idea, and she really hit a grand slam.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Joy.
And you know, Jaquel, I think the interview that we have lined up for today goes really well with Joy's segment. We actually had another interview lined up for today, but we moved it, and Chandrika kind of moved up a month, and it really worked out. And as you know, I love recording from other places.
Yes.
Like today at the PRX Podcast Garage in Boston, Austin, Brighton area. This interview we recorded at the Power Station.
Yep.
At Berkeley, NYC.
Yes. And just a little bit of facts about her. Chandrika Tandon is a former Berkeley trustee, an Indian American businesswoman and philanthropist, a Grammy nominated musician. She is the first Indian American woman to be elected partner at McKinsey and Company. And she also made a lot of money through her business skills and uses that money to follow her passions and give back.
That's right. And this might set off some warning bells for people. Jonah, cue the warning.
Warning!
Chandrika's not an alumni, but this is a Berkeley alumni podcast.
Yeah, but she is acquainted with Berkeley.
Yeah. No, I think just the point is that it is an alumni podcast, and our goal is to give you information and ideas that you need to be successful in your career. So we will go anywhere where we can find that, right?
Absolutely.
Even the PRX studio at the Podcast Garage in Boston, Austin, Brighton.
Right. So here is the interview. Enjoy. Can you just tell us how you got connected to Berkeley? Like, how did that start?
Well, about 10 years ago, I was introduced to Roger Brown. And so Roger and I met each other, and we had this instant connection, and we ended up finding a lot of things in common. And then he sort of invited me to join Berkeley's President's Council. And that's kind of how I got. And then they wanted me to get much more deeply engaged with Berkeley, but I didn't have the time to do that because I was already on the board at NYU. Then I just got interested in Berkeley, and I contributed some funds to create the Berkeley Tandon program for visiting scholars with the clinics.
The global clinics.
The global clinics. Global
clinics, yes.
My dream was that we would be able to create a way that we could take the best of the American and the Berkeley faculty, contemporary faculty, to different parts of the world using creating a pilot that we could then replicate in different parts of the world. I don't quite know how that program shaped out, but that was the idea. Mm-hmm. And I got engaged with Berkeley about doing that.
Yes, that's awesome. What did the global clinics kind of consist of? Like, what did they look like?
Well, I think the original idea of what the global clinics were supposed to look like and what final shape they took were a little different. Mm-hmm. The original idea was that we would send 3 or 4 great faculty to, say, India or Brazil or whatever, and who have a big jazz understanding and so on. But then we would recruit amazing musicians, young kids who are very talented, but will not in a million years be able to interact with the kind of faculty that really, that Berklee would be able to get to them. And that they would have a clinic, a 2 or 3 day clinic where they could kind of jam together, that they could create something together, collaborate together, and they could learn from these grades. And the idea was that we could actually create some teaching materials out of it that we could then take it to the next place. They did, in fact, involve many, many kids. It was done in India. But I think it morphed into something else. It morphed into the Berklee India Exchange and that whole piece. It's been, Berklee's had a great deal of success with that.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it sounds like another theme in your life of starting something with long-lasting power, because, I hear that and I definitely think about the Berklee India Exchange, but I also think about what Berklee's doing in Abu Dhabi, all of our city music programs, and just bringing people to the place where they can actually get this really enriched education.
See, and music is the one language that knows no borders, you know? And I think music is such a unifying, healing thing. And Berklee is so special in that it has really escaped the rigidity of the genres, and it's escaped the rigidity of the pigeonholes and the pockets. And so Berklee has really worked wonderfully to create an unbounded kind of experience of music with a contemporary focus. And part of that being unbounded is not just genre crossing, it's also crossing borders. And I think best is yet to come, because we'll start to see more and more collaborations, because in the traditional world we spoke of fusion, just fusion, but I think there's something a whole lot more than just fusion. It really is coming together to create a third idea, which is not A or B, but a whole new form of C. And I think that's the hope and the potential, that when you expose people to different worlds of music, that they aren't just thinking from their sphere, but they're thinking from different spheres.
Would you apply that kind of thinking and that process to your newest album, Amu's Treasures? Can you give, how did that come about?
For me, music was what my love was. I sang before I spoke. Music was part of every part of my life. I come from a very simple home. And I don't remember what chores I did, but I remember what songs I was singing when I was doing those chores. And so I've always been hearing music from the time I was born. But that music wasn't, this is children's music. You will listen to, a 3-4 beat kind of thing. It wasn't that. It was whatever was playing. So my mind was very richly opened. And that included Indian classical. It included Indian film music. It included Charlie Bird and Stan Getz. And it included Cliff Richard and Engelbert Humperdinck and the Beatles. I mean, so all of that was part of my listening thing. I never discriminated between one and the other. I just heard everything. But then when I got into my work life, I couldn't spend that much time with music. When I was traveling all over the world, I would go to Brazil and I would go listen to Caetano Veloso. I would listen to Gilberto Gil. I would go and find different forms of music in different countries wherever I was working. And I was working all over the world. So my music has been very globally influenced. I walk in, I don't think of a particular genre when I walk into the studio, or I walk into composing. So I may draw from a rag, or I might draw from an old tune. So I've always, and so when I've now gone back to singing about 20 years ago, and now I have little grandchildren, as I told you, they're 5 and 3. But when my little grandson was 3 weeks old, really, I used to start to sing to him. And he would calm down, he would get so happy. And then I would sing first I started with all these Vedic chants. I was just singing these chants, singing I should calm him down. He'd fall asleep promptly. But as he got older, a year and a half, he would say, Amu, which is what they call me, I want another song. I want another song. I want a new song. So I would have to look into my repertoire to say, what else can I sing to him?
Right.
And so this is how Amu's Treasure started. So when I drew on these songs, I didn't just draw on the floor is lava or Baby Shark or Lion King. I was drawing from my whole history of music, which included French songs, which included Greek, which included, and it actually have a lot more. I just put in a few songs in this. So in a sense, it started out being a product of my global heritage. Uh-huh. And then when we started to create the instrumentation for that, you know, I started to think about them in terms of different instruments coming together. So I took a song like Au Clair de la Lune, which is in French, but I put it together with a sitar. And it's a lullaby. So it's a sweet little lullaby. So that was kind of how I reimagined this. But I wasn't really setting out to create a global music album. I was trying to create an album which just had no boundaries, which just was focused on the lyricality of the music, drawing from whatever elements from the globe I could for my grandchildren. Wow. That was what Amu's Treasures was. Amu is a term which means happiness, which means purity. Mm-hmm. And it's a term my grandchildren call me. And so my thought is, you know, let me make this and leave it for them. And, you know, maybe once I'm gone, they would be able to listen to it. But the thing is, the whole experience has kind of changed for me because I started out doing this for my grandchildren, but it then started to evolve into something much bigger.
I just interviewed a student who is in the Berklee Indian Ensemble Choir, and he was talking about how his father was his guru for music and how his grandmother was his father's guru for music and his great-grandmother was his. And it's just like, it's that thread throughout the world, even through like osmosis. Music is just handed down from generation to generation.
Right. And one of the interesting reactions that I've had, including yesterday when I was doing an interview with some lady who was doing a parents magazine, she started really crying when she said, look, this just reminds me of the song my mother used to sing to me. And she said, I can remember the moment when she would sing these songs. And it's the same thing. I went to Prague and sang with the Ukrainian refugees, children for the Kroki Dobra. Now, all of those children, one of the most interesting things that those children, no one spoke English, by the way. And all of them have been practicing and singing these songs. And at the end of it, the entire audience, including the parents, including the grandparents, the fathers, mothers, were all singing, you know, que sera, sera. And there's something particularly poignant about it at this moment in time, but it's yet a universal song. And funnily enough, que sera, sera, the reason that landed up in this list is, of course, I knew it when I was a child. It landed up on this list because one day my little grandson said to me, he said, Amu, will there be a rainbow tomorrow? I said, I don't know, que sera, sera. And then I started to sing him Que Sera Sera. And of course, interestingly enough, which I didn't remember at that time, the second verse is, will there be rainbows, or will I be rainbows day after day, Que Sera, you know. And it was perfect for that moment. But then, you know, they love it. And then now it's just a matter of, it's almost like it's sort of a statement that they casually make when something, are we going to do this tomorrow? Que Sera Sera. And I think that's a good lesson. A good learning, even for the kids to have.
You started off, the purpose was for your grandchildren, but now it kind of is, the purpose is way bigger than that. Can you explain that more? Like, what is the purpose of it? Like, how do you see it as you're traveling to different places? How is this album impacting people all over the world?
You know, this is really, it started out as a hug for my grandchildren. It's become a hug for the world. Because it,
we need hugs in the world.
Really, you know, because what, and it's very unexpected because I didn't expect this kind of reaction. And so now this path has opened up in a very big way for this journey that I'm on right now. It started out going to Prague with the Ukrainian children. The interaction with the children ended up being much more than just the songs. It ended up being a discussion of, what does Amu mean? What does love mean? What does, they asked me, you know, 45 minutes or 50 minutes of 5 to 13 year olds asking me questions. They were asking me questions like, what kind of mother are you? What kind of grandmother are you? You know, and these were important questions for them to talk about. And how many hours a day do you practice? Why do you sing in French? And then in fact, I had a moment with them because no one has heard Sanskrit or chants. So they don't know what is meditation or anything. So I spoke to them in the Q&A. I said, look, in tomorrow's concert, our concert was the next day. I said, in tomorrow's concert, I'm thinking, I have all these Sanskrit chants, and I'm wondering if I should sing those chants tomorrow. I said, what do you guys think? They said, well, sing it to us now. So of course, sure enough, I sang it a cappella to them. They heard it for about 5 minutes and they all got very quiet. They told me how it made them feel. They said they felt so happy and calm. And they all said, Chandrika, you must do it tomorrow. You must sing the chants tomorrow. So, you know, I had these children giving me the sense of joy and love. And we finished all this concert. But the most important thing that happened after it is that everybody had drawn a picture of Amu. I've created a character called Amu. So everybody had drawn a picture of Amu. And all they wanted was hugs.
Wow.
And in fact, one mother of one little boy came. The boy was crying. I have that picture. Maybe we'll send you some of those pictures.
Yes.
And this boy had red-rimmed eyes because he couldn't join the performance. But he'd drawn his picture of Amu. And all he wanted was to come meet me and give me a hug. So that happened. And the same thing happened in Maryland. The same thing happened in Virginia. I just did these concerts with 250 high school children.
Wow.
In the two Maryland schools. Virginia was about 100, 200 younger kids, much more elementary school kids. And everybody wanted pictures and hugs. They just said, oh, I want to come for a hug. No, I want to come for a hug. Hugs in twos and threes. And the head of the Kroki Dobra said something to me. She said, don't underestimate the need for an Amu that everyone has at the moment. And that's why I created Amu, not as a personal figure, but as a character that's an expression of love.
Wow.
You know, because Amu, I'm Amu, you're Amu, you're Amu, we're all Amu, and we've all had an Amu in our lives. And we all have the potential to do more of that. And right, it's not just right now, any time. And all our lives have been irrevocably changed by someone, by some moment of love like that.
Yeah.
When somebody told us you are special, you are loved, and whatever your travails and tribulations are, you are loved so unconditionally. And I think that's the message certainly I want to project with the music. And I'm hoping that whoever works and listens and participates in the album are inspired to do just that. And that's my journey. So we're going to do many more of these concerts now. We're doing a series of concerts in different parts of the world. We have many invitations, including Panama for the Panama Jazz Festival with Danilo and Patricia.
Oh, okay. I got to tell you, I'm getting a lot of Mr. Rogers vibes, which I love. And I don't think there's enough of those people in the world, you know. And my daughter's 8. And so I was getting ready to leave to come to New York. She turned to my wife. She was like, that's my guy, you know. Yeah. And it's like someone like Amu. It's like, that's someone that we all need. You know, we all need to have our person.
Our person. And it's funny. They literally, one of the things I did, and I spent a year and a half doing that, is creating 35 lyric videos and one big chant video of 27 minutes using the character called Amu, pulling out the messages of these songs.
Yeah.
So even a song like Where Have All the Flowers Gone, right? It's a, you know, one could look at it and say it's a dark song. You know, where have all the flowers gone? They went to young girls, they went to young men, they went to soldiers, they went to graveyards, and the graveyards became flowers again. It's a whole circle. That's what the original song was. That's one of the songs in my album in English and in French in a very folk version of it. But I've pulled out a big message that, you know, things, creation changes, you know, things disappear and they get recreated. That's life. And the one thing I was also going to say is that as part of this album, I did not want to dumb down the music for the children. I worked very hard. And this is my big beef that, you know, we don't need to, you know, we talk about playing Mozart when the baby's in the womb. And then when the baby comes out, we don't think as much about the sophistication. You know, we go straight into, oh, let's just give them the 3-beat, four note kind of songs. I didn't want to do that. I wanted them to have the finest musicians, the finest artists, the finest production. I mean, that's why we were at Avatar, by the way, at Power Station. Power Station's not cheap. Power Station's not your garage band damn studio, you know?
Right.
That's why we had, and that's where all the Berklee alumni came in. There were so many Berklee people, by the way, in addition to others that were involved in making this album, both on the production side, on the engineering side, the post-production side. Small little battle I took on, and it's probably a losing battle, but it certainly worked amazingly with my grandchildren, including these chants. And these chants are 27 minutes, 26.52 minutes long. And they're very sophisticated, and they all talk about finding the light inside. That's what the chants do. My little grandson, who is now three, when he was 2 years old, the first time I played the chants, he heard it. He was, because they're not allowed to talk when the music's playing, because it's late in the night. The lights are off. They're both sitting in their cribs very quietly listening to the music. He said, "Amu, this is too long." That was his first reaction. So I said, "Okay, it's too long." The third time, he suddenly said, "Amu, please, can I talk?" I said, "Yes." He says, "Can you just tell me why you say Om so many times?" I said, "Well, I say Om so many times because it reminds you to take a deep breath. And each time you take a deep breath, it calms you." So, okay, fine. So the song goes on and there are a few Oms that come in. So the next time I play this, every time an Om comes in, I see these little chubby boys sitting there and going, because he's trying to take it, because, you know, and you don't understand how incredibly rich the neuroplasticity of children's minds are, and we cannot dumb them down. We just shouldn't dumb them down.
Absolutely. And I think, Jaquelle, when we look at the Instagram feed and stuff, there's a lot of alumni that do children's music. And they do take it to that level of, okay, they can handle it, you know? And we have alum that do all kinds of like characters, or they'll use children's instruments to make all the children's music. The one through line that I see through all of them is kindness. You know, these are really kind, thoughtful people.
And I was also going to say, like, a lot of alums also write books as well, and they talk about how music is so important in children's lives. And it kind of just, you know, has a correlating theme to Amu's treasures and like just being good people and using music to start young and then bringing it with you as you get older.
A reporter from India just sent me a week ago, her father, who's got dementia, has got severe dementia. And because, you know, she'd heard Amu's treasures and, you know, she'd seen the version of Kesara. And he's an old Indian man who doesn't really, he's a classically trained Indian singer. She sent me a video of her daughter and her grandfather, her father who's got dementia. He doesn't speak, but he sings. And he's singing Ke Sara Sara, but he's also putting Indian solfege notations to Ke Sara Sara. And he's singing that. It's incredibly beautiful. Wow. But I think she says he just remembers some songs now. So some part of our deepest memory gets these songs and we don't know what it does. And I think that's the glory of music. And that's why I think I say all my best experiences, my happiest places with music.
I mean, that's what they said about Tony Bennett, you know, that the Alzheimer's had gone to a point where he was just kind of a shell off the stage. But then when he'd get with his piano player and get into rehearsals, you would physically see him turn into Tony Bennett again. It's like, yeah, the music is in there somewhere.
And it's in some part of our brain and it affects us in ways that we don't understand. I mean, and we are not even talking about music in the most broad sense, but as you start to get into repetitive sound and sound healing, there's so much more to music. And in fact, with the chants, that's the space I've been getting into more and more, because we are all vibrations if you look at the physics of it.
Absolutely.
And sound is all vibrations. We just have to find the right frequencies to vibrate together in so that all the disturbances can be calmed down and things can be set in a more calm way. That is the journey through children. Look, you can't, as I look at it, right, any one of us, we can't boil an ocean, but we can certainly boil a teacup, you know, or boil a thimble. So whatever we can do. So my thing is, you know, touching a few families, a few lives, in the best way I can as I'm going through this journey.
That was so touching. It's so deep and clear. I love it.
The vibrations, I think, are aligned here.
Well, because you are all, you know, because you're all sitting with music and you all understand it because we are all feeling it. You wouldn't be serving an institution that's dedicated to music.
Right.
But I think we often need to remind ourselves about the higher purpose of music, you know?
Right.
I like art for art's sake. We shouldn't turn our crappy stuff. But I also think, you know, you can get too carried away with art just for art's sake. It's really art for a purpose. And the question is, what is that purpose and how do we fulfill that?
So at the stage in your career,
You have accomplished many, many things. What inspires you to keep going?
You know, when you've been given a certain set of gifts, whatever they are. And when I say gift, it's not, oh, I'm a gift of whatever. It's a certain set of, you have some time, you have some talent, and you have some treasure. You have a bit of all three. I feel like at this stage, I need to just use it to the highest impact possible. And where the purpose is not about me. Because about 20 years ago, when I did a whole pivot in my life, I went through a crisis of spirit, if you call it, where I just said I didn't want to stay in a selfish bubble. I just didn't want to only keep, you know, keep doing more business, doing more work, you know, being very focused on me, my family, me. I just decided I was going to get out of that. That's why I went back to music in an intense way. And then I went back to service. So that's how I joined. I started to work. I didn't join any boards. I just started to work free of cost at NYU as an executive in residence at the business school. And I've served for 23 years without money, in fact, giving. And so now it's funny that you're asking this question because again, this morning, I keep asking myself this question every few days because I want to intentionally set a course for the highest, best use of how I will spend my time. Because, you know, very often it's so easy to sleepwalk through my, you know, things happen. You know, today, I feel like just walking, watching TV or some friends land up, you know, you're hanging out. And not that that's bad. I love doing it too. So it's not, I'm not saying, oh my God, it's whatever. All of that's good. But the problem is time just flies by. Suddenly you're 50 and you're 60 and you're 70 and you're 80 and you're 90. I just don't want that to happen. So a lot of what I think about is impactfully balancing these different axes of music, of, as I say, the two big axes of economic empowerment through STEM, which is what I'm doing with the engineering school, is chairing the board and all of that, and emotional empowerment through music. How can we empower others through music? However we can do it, either through my music or helping others find their music. So those are the two themes. I had a lot of themes and I've started to whittle them down to a couple because I don't think I can be effective in more than a couple.
Right.
Well, my question on that is, and I think about this often when people who've had as much success as you, but you know, you kind of beat the odds and get all these great educations as a woman being able to get into these male-dominated institutions. You become an executive. You can become one of the first female executives to get pregnant and have a child. Then you decide to switch your career and focus on music, and then you get nominated for a Grammy. You know, and then I imagine at some point you must feel like you're at the top of the mountain in terms of your success and what you've done. And my question is, what do you do when you're at the top?
You see, I don't think of success that way. I used to maybe, but I don't think of success that way. Mm. I think success, even now, is simply the freedom to do what I think I should do. And if I'm smart enough to figure out what it is I should do, then I would be successful. So it's two things, you know, because as I say, it's being intentional, being clear and intentional. So to me, success is that. So you could take many dimensions, right? If I'm miserable and mentally unhappy, it doesn't matter what talent, treasure, time I have. I'm just going to spend my time wallowing in unhappiness. So it's kind of a wasted thing. So I don't have the freedom to do what I should be doing because I have a barrier. So I have a job. To me, part of that success is eliminating that barrier. Same thing, you know, if you're on top of the world, you know, and you're unhealthy, you know, there's not much, you can't go far with it. You've got to take it. So I just think one has to take a holistic picture. So I don't think of success. Money's never been my motivator. Power's never my motivator. I've never fought for, you know, look, this was part of my spiritual epiphany, if you like, 23 years ago, to be exact, when I understood very viscerally that if two people outside me were talking about, oh, how good I am or how bad I am, my day doesn't change. My entire good and bad is really based on how I feel inside and what I do inside. So I think of success in very different ways. So there is no mountain. What it is a series of journeys that I'm taking. And I don't look back at the journey that I have already come from. So because one of the things is women, we spend a lot of time beating ourselves up and we are trying to go somewhere. You know,
tell me about
I'm not good enough. Yes. And you're always, you know, because you're always competing. You walk in there with a bit of a chip on your shoulder because you're sitting there and saying, oh, they don't want me there. You know, I'm different. And I had all those disadvantages and I'm done with all that. I don't think that way. I walk in and say, I am not a perfectionist. I am perfection.
Mm.
I'm perfect the way I am now. I'm here. I'm doing the best I can. And that's right. The best I have.
That is really cool to hear. Because sometimes, you know, like you were saying, like as women, we can beat ourselves up, right? Like especially, I'm sure anyone, woman.
All of them.
Yeah, we all beat ourselves up.
But women have a greater tendency to do that because we carry a lot. And our whole, you know, we're sort of genetically programmed to just chew a bit more about things because we're more emotional, more compassionate. Again, broad generalizations, but more than not fit that stereotype.
Who's speaking to me? I don't know who else, but you're definitely speaking to me on that one.
I'm speaking to you, but I'm speaking to myself. I'm speaking to everyone because we all have shared experiences.
Right.
We all may look different in details, but we are so connected and so in the same space. But when you have these thoughts, it's like a Grand Central Station playing up in your head of the thoughts, and you have no time to take a break. And as an artist, you must see this, right? As an artist or even as a business person, if you have your mind crisscrossing in crazy directions, you're working at 50% of your productivity. You're sitting there and doing stuff. And in your mind, you're thinking, oh, God, I messed up that concert. Oh, God, I messed up this thing. And goodness, maybe I'm saying stupid things on this podcast. I mean, God knows it's nonsensical at some point. So whatever I could do is already discounted times God what that number is. You're stammering, you're stuttering, you're not sure, your head's not clear. So my journey has been to get rid of all of that.
Well, don't worry about saying anything stupid on the podcast. I try to say all the stupid stuff.
I get that you're not allowed to. Even this, to me, is what I wouldn't let you do. I am sure it's nothing stupid.
You know, stupid.
Nothing stupid. It's interesting, and you've had great things to say so far.
So far.
It's been a critical part of my journey. It's a critical part of my own transformation, which has allowed me to serve, you know, that allows me to be not competitive. It's not, I'm not trying to get anywhere. Where I am is fine. You know, I think it's, so that's why I like economic empowerment with emotional empowerment. Because, you know, you don't want, when you're struggling for your basic needs, like food or shelter, that's a different challenge. So I think we kind of, I would just like to do whatever we can to make sure that our kids are educated, that they have all of that, that they have the life skills. In fact, a lot of my discussions about Berkeley even used to be, hey, it's very important that when kids graduate, even if they're musicians or something, they need to be equipped with life skills.
Absolutely.
So that, you know, one day, you know, maybe your voice goes out and you can't sing anymore. So what, you're going to be then stuck depressed because your voice went away? Or maybe something happens. Yeah, vicissitudes of life are given. You know, 50% of life's going to be good and 50% is going to be bad. That's the law of averages. If it's 60, that's good, you're lucky.
Is there anything else that you would like to add or say to
No, I just think, you know, I think the opportunities for Berkeley and for Berkeley alumni to really make the world a better place is so profound. And I think my sort of prayer for everyone is that while they're making music and while they're doing this amazing, on this early parts of this amazing journey that they're on, that they keep a very compassionate and happy mind so that they could just be, what's the point of being a miserable person and spending your time, but to really focus on how to be in a great place. And this takes very simple things to get there. And then whatever you do, it won't feel like work. Whatever you do won't feel like, even the stresses that come up won't feel too complicated. So that would be my sort of, what I would tell the young people at Berkeley as an older person connected and have gone through my own life.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming and reminiscing your times here and talking to us about your latest album, Amu's Treasures.
This has been fantastic. This is actually Jaquel and I's first tandem interview. So.
Oh, but I loved having the two of you talking to me. Thank you so much. I appreciate you both. Thank you.
All right, y'all. So that was the interview with Chandrika Tandon. What'd you think about it?
I thought that it was really well needed. And, you know, I think what she talked about in terms of everybody needing an Amu really resonates right now. Kind of like what Joy was saying, like that music that people share with you. It's those feelings that people give you and share with you as well.
What stood out to me is when we asked her about like her mission, which is to elevate human happiness through music and education. And that also kind of ties back to Joy Allen and like just elevating the happiness through the music, right? So just uplifting spirits and just hearing Chandrika's, you know, like her story and how her love for her grandchildren is also kind of showcased in her music. I think that that is pivotal, especially in today's world as well. Like, we need the music. And I also like how she was talking about how it's just like a big hug and the world needs hugs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes all we need is a hug. And I'm very thankful for all of the gems that she dropped. You know, I love a good gem in our interview. So yes, I was really thankful for this time with her.
Yeah. And I think that it goes well for all ages, you know. I don't think there's ever a point in your life where you stop needing that type of emotional support from people. So
to take us out today, we have a song by Chandrika called Que Sera. Do you know what Que Sera means?
Whatever will be, will be.
Yes. And I think that's really fitting for this episode. And I hope everybody knows that everything will be okay.
Yeah. Hang in there, friends.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, what will be. Then I grew up and fell in love. I asked my sweetheart, what lies ahead? Will we have rainbows day after day? Here's what my sweetheart said. Que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, what will be. Now I have children of my own. They ask me, mother, what will I be? Will I be handsome? Will I be rich? I tell them tenderly, que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, what will be, que sera, sera, what will be.